It's like one of those things when you you have your silent mentors and your real mentors. Your real mentors are a step or two ahead of you. Your silent mentors are 10 or 20 steps in front of you. And you are a mentor to someone who's one or two steps behind you.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 76, with the founder of Virtual Summit Tech, Jamie Slutsky.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things equal.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome to another edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. My name is JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions, and your host for today's session. I'm happy for you guys to be spending some time with me here today, and hopefully you'll get a lot of nuggets out of the conversation with my guest. I'm personally part of the team at New Inceptions, a website dedicated to helping people find their own personal freedom. And in this podcast, released each Thursday, we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. This session is powered by Virtual Summit Tech. One of the ways that creatives and especially online entrepreneurs get popular are through webinars. And I'm sure you've watched one yourself, and by the end, you probably thought that the host really knew their stuff. However, sometimes a webinar isn't necessarily going to be able to cover the material that you want to present perfectly. Or maybe you simply feel like you don't have enough credibility in the market yet, so you decided that you'd like to present the knowledge of other people instead of your own. And in fact, this is actually what Napoleon Hill did in his book, Think and Grow Rich. You know, he gathered the knowledge of other successful people, sorted it all out, and presented it in the book. What would you say if you could actually combine the process with a webinar with actually highlighting other people in your course? Through, you know, possibly different segments where they're playing the professor, or through an interview process like Napoleon used. That's exactly what a virtual summit is. And just like anything else online, a virtual summit can be complex to set up, and that's where Virtual Summit Tech comes in. They help you set up a website built to your needs and make sure that the summit itself runs as smoothly as possible. And if doing a virtual summit sounds like something you might want to do in 2017, book a call with Jamie and her team today. And you can do this by going on over to newinceptions.com/virtualsummittech and then clicking on the book a complimentary call button on their site. And again, that's newinceptions.com/virtualsummittech. Alrighty. So in today's session, I wanted to find out more about Virtual Summit Tech and what it's all about, and you know why its creator Jamie Slutsky started it. And you know, she has a background in computer science, and since 2010 she's been helping people set up their first business websites, usually through WordPress. But it hasn't been just doing the front end of WordPress. I mean, she does the entire site, front end and back end, and I mean database stuff. You know, as video has become more and more prominent on the web, there's been more of an interest in webinars. And as I mentioned earlier, there's tons of reasons to do them. However, it's been just recently that the idea of packing the power of several speakers into a series of webinars might be the next closest thing to holding a conference. I mean, it gives you the power to do basically your own TED event if that's what you really want to do. I mean, it's pretty powerful stuff. So in this session, I find out more about virtual summits, how she helps her clients with them, and what some of the key components are to having a successful virtual event. And we also go into all the other stuff that makes an AOL podcast unique, including why she left her comfortable corporate job in the first place, and just really why she went on the path that she did. she's on today. So lots of content in this session. Show notes are available at newinceptions.com/76, and I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here, and today I have a fun interview with someone that I think is going to be very relevant to many of you listening today. And Jamie Slutsky is the CEO of Virtual Summit Tech, as well as the founder of Simply Jamie, a website designing company. Having two daughters, she's also a proud mompreneur and is living proof that you can be a mom and be successful in business. So definitely glad to have you on today, Jamie. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Total pleasure. Total pleasure. So you're actually out in Redmond, Washington, right?
Yes, I am. Home of Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft and a whole bunch of other things. And in fact, you know, my last interviewee, Rena, she lives out there. And then back in session 72, I had a guest, Claude Herrera, who's out there. So yeah, you got Microsoft, you got those two, you got Nintendo is out there, at least their North American headquarters.
Yeah, they're here still in Redmond.
Yeah, that's out there. So you got a lot of things going on. I've always wanted to travel out there and check it all out. But what do you think is the appeal for all those tech companies?
You know, I think I really wish I knew, but I'm really glad they're here because the Northwest is just beautiful and it's where I wanted to live. So it made it easy.
Oh, so you're a transplant then, or?
I am. I'm from north of here. I'm from Canada. I'm from Vancouver, BC. So my house, my childhood home is 2.5 hours away from my adult home in a foreign country, which is kind of cool to say.
Nice. Yeah, Vancouver, I have some connections over that way too, so that's not a bad place either. But yeah, no, I just, you know, when us Midwesterners think of that area, all we can think of is rain, and it's like maybe forests. And I'm just like, does that mean that the tech giants is like living out in the middle of nowhere?
No, we have freeways and we have, you know, everything else as well.
But yeah, you're no tech slouch yourself. You went to the college for computer science and, you know, I got to ask, I mean, that's for me, I'm even a tech person. I went for school for electrical engineering. Was that something that you always wanted to do, was be a computer science major?
Well, you know, those books that your parents collect when you're growing up, those childhood books of what do you want to be when you grow up? In second grade, I said computer scientist.
Oh, yeah.
So it was kind of always a thing for me. I learned how to use computers at a young age. By the time I went off to college, I didn't remember that I wanted to be a computer scientist, and just knew I was going to do something in the math-based sciences, and computer science was right there in front of me, so I jumped on it.
Wow. And so, I mean, that brings back a lot of for me, because, you know, for me, being a gamer ever since I was like 5 years old, like I was asked, well, what do you want to be, you know, when you grow up, even second grade for me as well. And I was like, okay, how do I make video games for a living? And back then it was, you know, you still had people that were making video games that had grown up or had gone to school as electrical engineers. And so I thought that was the way to do it. Little did I know that when I got to age, it's like, oh, you got to be an actual go to school for game design and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
Didn't quite go the path I wanted to go, but making a correction since then. But so, I mean, what got you interested in computer science then? I mean, did you just, you know, see a lot of computers one time as you're growing up, or?
You know, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, really, and my librarian at our school brought the first electronic checkout system in our district into our school. I was in first grade, and he just kind of taught me how to use it. We had a computer lab in school with, you know, the good old Apple IIs. And, you know, I just took a fascination to it. And I always spent my recesses using the computers. And my dad loves gadgets and stuff. So he brought a computer into our home probably in 1984, maybe 85. And so, you know, when it came about, I just kept on working on it. I learned how to use DOS and manipulate things in DOS. And then when Windows came out, I knew how to do that. And it's just been a lifelong desire to use computers. My fifth grade teachers actually told my parents in a conference once that I can't spend my whole life in front of a computer. I'd love to run into that lady now.
Yeah, she didn't quite predict the future too well. That's for sure. I mean, it's just amazing, you know, for those of us who did grow up in the 80s and 90s, that, you know, how much technology has taken over, and that, you know, and a good thing, it's a blessing. You know, it's a blessing at the same time. It's a curse, you know. And it's just like, it's life. You know, people adjust. So.
Yep. Absolutely.
So you got your degree in computer science, and what'd you do with your degree afterwards?
You know, I never actually worked at Microsoft. It's just funny that it's in my backyard. But no, I ended up working in the IT department at a Fortune 100 company.
Okay.
And I worked there for over a decade. I was working there when I met my husband. I was working there when we had both of our kids. I quit working there in February of 2011. So 6 years.
Wow.
I've been, you know, was when I stopped that. So now you can put an age to everything based on all of that.
Oh, well, again, I mean, it just means that you're a Gen Xer. I mean, that's all it means. It's cool. You know, no offense.
No, none taken. None taken. It's a great year. I'll be 40 this summer. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. So you've been doing this for 6 years, and I mean, what got you into wanting to be a web designer? I mean, that seems to be, or at least in web design. I mean, that seems to be, you said you were in IT, but I know personally, well, maybe when you got started, but today is quite different being in IT versus being a web design person. How did you get into that?
Yeah, so I really found my way into web design through web development because I have the coding background. It was easy for me to pick something up. And if we go back to when my little one, who was born in January of 2009, was born, I said to my husband, I said, I have to find a way to not work corporate hours. I want to raise these kids. And so it was just kind of hustling, trying to figure out what I could do. And someone I think it was actually at a Chamber of Commerce event in one of the towns nearby, that she said, pick up WordPress, see if you gravitate toward it. And it was just meant to be, because I was reading code and doing stuff. And instead of most people who are like, okay, how do I use this? I went into the code and I said, how does this work? So from the get-go, I was in the development space. I picked up PHP, I picked up CSS, which are the two tools I use the most when I'm building websites. And because I have the coding background and the technology is just an implementation of the stuff I learned in school, I really felt like this took me back to where I was with that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once I got a grasp of how to implement design, I could start saying, well, I think it would look better this way or that way. So I don't design things from scratch. Okay. I use inspiration, because I don't have the design expertise in Photoshop and things like that.
Right.
I much more have the implementing it on the website space.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, what you were dabbling in that, was it a slow increase between like doing freelance stuff and then doing, you know, still having the day job, or what made you eventually pull the trigger to kick the corporate job?
That's exactly what it was. It started as a freelance thing, and it was about 10 months of freelance work before I had enough clients and enough projections in order to say, okay, we're good. And left the job. You know, I was able to cut my daughter's hours at daycare back, or my younger one's hours at daycare back. My older one, we kept her. She was preschool age. We didn't really want to change her schedule, but cut her back. I got to spend more time with her. I learned the value of carrying my laptop with me everywhere so that I could just get 5 minutes of work in. and things like that. So, yeah, it was really just kind of ramping up the freelance business, getting my name out there, and continuing to put out good work. That's really the biggest thing is, you know, when you do something and your client's happy, you both win.
Right, right. And so how was the decision taken by your more broader family and friends that, you know, you're getting out of the corporate world and now doing your big thing?
Well, my dad is a lawyer and he started his own law firm with one of his best friends back in the early 70s. So he understood, you know, that what it took, and he understands what it takes. And, you know, I mean, he's still practicing law and still loving what he's doing this many years later. So I kind of had a good foundation of somebody who was going to support me in that regard. Mm-hmm. My husband just really wanted to make sure that I was putting the family first and making sure that I wasn't doing this for selfish reasons, which I think is part of the reason why it took as long as it did, was because I was really, you know, trying to show him, and I successfully did, that, you know, the family is first, and that when I work, you know, for myself and on my own terms and on my hours, everyone wins. And so that was big. And I don't really feel like I had a whole lot of pushback from people saying, no, you have to stay in corporate, Jamie. You know, I don't think I ever had any of that.
Yeah. Well, and I know a lot of people do struggle with that because it's like the whole security thing, but it sounds like to me that you were able to ramp, I mean, 10 months, I mean, you were able to ramp up pretty well. Were you already living there in Redmond when you were doing?
Yes.
Okay. So
yeah.
Then, I mean, you'd probably had, are most of your clients local back then, or were you, you know, was it online marketing that got you your first jobs? How did you get your first clients?
I got my first clients through word of mouth. The same person who mentioned look at WordPress gave me the first couple of clients. They said, hey, this would be a good fit. This would be a great place to start. They were local. And then I kind of fell into a certain WordPress theme that I was working on, and there were forums in there. And that was kind of where my next set of clients came from. It was people that I met through that forum who were like, no, I'm not doing this myself. I need to hire. And then it kind of went on from there. And I look back and say, where did that client come from? Where did those clients come from? And they've come from, you know, word of mouth. They've come from, you know, online forums or on Facebook. I have a number of people that I met through Facebook groups these days. It's just all over the place.
Okay. Yeah, no, you said 2009 was when you started. Like,
2011 is when I quit my job. So it was 2010 that okay. I was starting to build
yeah,
a client.
Yeah. Base. So you're looking, I'm trying to, it wasn't, were you working with like Thesis or Genesis? Was that the?
Actually, it was Headway Themes.
Okay.
But yes, it was that generation of okay. Thesis and Genesis. I won a personal license for Headway from WP Beginner, actually.
Okay.
Way back in 2010. And that's kind of where that all started.
Yeah,
it's crazy how these things just transpire.
That's when I was cutting my teeth on WordPress as well. And like, I think... Yeah, my first one was Thesis, and just trying to emulate what Pat Flynn had done with his website, I was just like, like, how do I duplicate this? And it, yeah, no, I mean, it was so much harder back then than what it is now. And it's just,
oh yes, like these page builders we've got nowadays.
Oh yeah,
they make the other things laughable. You know, it's like, really, you were trying to do that?
Oh yeah, oh yeah, and you know, it's just. It's just insane how many videos you had to watch to get a little bit of code. It's like, how do I move this like couple of spaces down? You know, it's just like,
yeah, yeah. And that's the thing. That was the funniest thing is that I never had those questions because I started with the code mm-hmm. instead of starting with what I wanted. I started with the structure. So it was probably advantageous, but I can tell you, I still look things up pretty regularly just to make sure that I'm doing them right so that I don't have to struggle with it.
Yeah. You coders definitely have a way of doing stuff. There's a, what is that? The stack. There's a thing that you guys all go back towards for like certain little clippets of code. What's that called?
Which one are you talking about? Like Stack Exchange?
Stack Exchange. That's it.
Yeah. Where people post their questions of like, how do I get this to work? And people jump in and answer. Yeah. I probably look at Stack Exchange several times a week.
Yeah. Well,
because the answers are already there.
Oh yeah, exactly. And that's why recreate the wheel for sure. So reinvent the wheel. But kudos to you for being able to put up with code, because even when I was going through electrical engineering, I was more the hardware guy. I was just like looking at the software. I was just like, I can read this, but putting this together, no way. I was never an author of code. So kudos to you.
Yeah. And I look at my coding skills and I think they're laughable. My husband is way beyond me in his coding abilities. And it's pretty cool to watch when he says, oh, I'm going to implement this. And he just goes and does it. I'm like, oh, okay. That was all from memory. So I'm inspired by him all the time. Wow. He's the Microsoftie in our family.
Jeez. So what do you think? I mean, as far as early hurdles go, what do you remember having to get through when you were first starting out?
Oh, it was just a matter of how do you start out? Show people that you really know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because you don't have that portfolio. I think still to this day, I hate portfolios because it's a snapshot in time and, you know, the client may have moved on. They may have closed their shop, things like that. The portfolio has probably been my biggest nemesis because it just doesn't stay constant. And so always showing, yes, I really can do that. Or, you know, that kind of thing. It was always the hardest part about selling myself as the freelancer, as the contractor to do the job. But then it was also, you know, making sure that I stuck to timelines because I tend to go down rabbit holes on things like I want to make sure that everything is pixel perfect on all devices, which is part of what I am now known for within my circles, is that, you know, it's going to look good on a phone and on a tablet and on a PC and all those things. But when I was on the cutting edge of that and people weren't really worried about it too much yet, it ended up being that their project was delayed because I was worried about it looking right on a tablet.
Mm-hmm. So you had said that you basically are in certain circles now. So you're kind of like part of a group of people that all kind of have a specialty in what you do then? Is that what you're...
No, I just mean that in the circles that I, you know, put myself in, whether they're, you know, Facebook groups or in-person networking opportunities or things like that, that I am now able to, you know, to effectively say, yeah, this is what I do. This is what I'm known for. Oh, you're okay. Going to have this site that does these things. And it's kind of an expected thing at this point rather than, oh, do you want that? You know, I mean, it's part of my package.
Gotcha. So, you know, I bring it up to one of the local people there in Redmond. We talked about how, you know, Claude works on the back end sort of stuff. And for the most part, you got what? You got back end development, you got front end, you got design. And then you got people that kind of specialize in connecting everything together. Out of all of those, would you say then that you're more like the front end type?
Yeah, I don't want to put myself in a box. I am definitely front end. I really am passionate about the front end, mm-hmm. but I'm going to make the rest of it work. I love integration. I love making things work together. And if there is something that needs to be coded and written into the database and, you know, things like that, I do that as well. I won't write a theme from scratch because that's a waste of my time. There are tools out there like we were alluding to before. But I can definitely write PHP and, you know, do that kind of stuff to enhance what's available. Like I just wrote a short code yesterday for a client's project.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Cause there's some things out there that, you know, with me, it's like, I know that it's custom code and it's just like, they should have just, you know, when they do custom code, they should make that a plugin. At least that's my thought. But you get so many plugins, and then you start loading everything down, and it makes the site slower and slower. And it's just like, yeah, about that. But
yeah, no, I try and minimize the number of plugins that we use that are going to slow down the front end. And that's the key. There's two sets of plugins. There's plugins for the front end and plugins for the back end. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the plugins on the back end to make it so that you can keep things organized better, that's great. You know, and making sure that your site's secure, that's great. Making sure that it's backed up. You know, those are all really valuable. It's when the plugins throw extraneous scripts onto the front end that slow it down and things mm-hmm. like that, where you have the problems.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know enough to be dangerous, but you know, when you kudos to you guys that know how to do that sort of work. Cause yeah, clueless. But yeah, so Virtual Summit Tech, this is your new business.
Yes.
How long have you been doing this?
I produced my first summit under Virtual Summit Tech in September. Okay. Well, technically I produced it in November, but the summit that I produced in September was the catalyst for actually creating the company.
Okay. Gotcha. And yes. You know, as a content coach and consultant myself, I'm really glad to be able to talk to you about this. And so the first thing that I want to know is, what exactly is a virtual summit?
A virtual summit is a multi-part webinar on steroids.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's one of the ways I describe it. Another way that I describe it is a lot of TV crammed together. That's a bunch of interviews. In other ways of saying it, a virtual summit is centered on a single theme or a single type of person who's looking for knowledge or sources or resources or things like that. And virtual summits are recorded or live video interviews or video presentations or roundtable discussions, things like that,
okay.
that you can enjoy from your own home, from your own computer. You don't have to pay for them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And with so many people that are beating on the drums still on webinars, and I'm sure you see, especially right now, I'm seeing like several people saying or sponsored ads, you know, that are dropping like, do this webinar and learn how to, you know, if you learn from me, you can have these kinds of crazy results on your webinar. And it's just, you know, why would someone want to do a virtual summit or host a virtual summit as opposed to doing their own thing and doing a webinar and especially studying, you know, these tried and true tactics?
Yeah. So they have different purposes. I really believe that. I think that the purpose of running a webinar is to grow your list like it is for a webinar, but it's to position yourself as, you know, within the experts within that field. So instead of being a host where you've got a tangible product that your webinar is leading to, your product that you might be selling is your collection of interviews. Mm-hmm. You may not have a course or a membership site or a product or something on the tail end of it. It may just be, I've curated all of these, you know, conversations and you can purchase them so you can have them forever. So having a webinar leads to a concrete sale of some kind, whereas a summit may be, it's in and unto itself what you are selling.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And I mean, are there like certain keys that lead to having successful virtual summit? I mean, what are there like different structures and like, I guess I'm kind of curious because I'm starting to realize that I'm putting one together right now for podcasters. And, mm-hmm. I kind of stumbled onto it. It was just like, you know, all these people are wanting to, you know, they're all basically teaching others how to become a podcaster. Wouldn't it be interesting if I just like, you know, help them create something for this one group, so to speak, and mm-hmm. they could kind of use that as a product. So I guess in a way, I mean, that is a summit. And so I'm wondering, yeah, I mean, are there like certain structures or, you know,
there is a lot of flexibility in it. But the general idea is that it's at least 3 days consecutive, and there's at least 3 sessions per day. So, and then beyond that, there are like 101 different ways to implement it. Some of the things that I've seen that are very successful is having a very tight niche on what you're doing for your summit. So you're not going to say, I am doing a summit so you can start podcasting necessarily. You may do a summit that's really, opening your eyes to avoiding all of the mistakes of podcasting by learning from pros who have come before you.
Okay.
Gotcha. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just kind of positioning it differently. So it's the same way, you don't necessarily want to go to a virtual summit that's, I'm going to help you look your best. It may more along the lines be of a summit that is, okay, we are going to help you create healthy habits so that you can feel good about exercising. So it's like, it's a little bit more tangible, a little bit more specific. Mm-hmm. The more specific you can get that all of your speakers are talking to that same central core message, the stronger the message is going to be and the better you are going to look as the expert who curated this content and produced it and created it and put it out there.
Gotcha. And really, I mean, it just kind of seems like it's just a kind of a tilt towards more of a benefit as opposed to being something big and just kind of,
yeah. Well, you want people to be able to know what they're getting into, know what they're going to be biting off, and want them to feel successful. I mean, if you had a summit that says, I'm going to teach you all about online marketing, that's way too broad a topic, way too broad a topic. And people are not going to be successful implementing whatever they learn because it's not narrow enough for a large enough people to have group of people to have success. Mm-hmm. People may have success, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's new. Like I said, it's new to me as a concept, but it makes sense because, when I was thinking about doing this, it was me using my background with going through what's called a foundation. And I was just taking the what I learned from it and being like, okay, what is this community asking for? What do they need? And the more podcasters I talk to independently is like, yeah, if I could have something that would answer people's questions and, helping them get started, then that would be great. So, okay.
Yep. Yeah. No, and I'm in the same boat of, okay, so how do I make, my clients' summits successful? What can I provide them so that they have the right check boxes to tick off as they're putting things together? I'm such a techie that I really stay on the tech side, but more and more I'm finding that, if they go down the wrong content direction, mm-hmm. that I kind of have to steer them back saying, no, we want to make sure that you're going into it this way and things like that. So.
Gotcha. And as far, I mean, you brought it up, but what kind of tech are you looking at? I mean,
that's a great question. From a high level, we use WordPress. We use some kind of email marketing that has segmentation, funnels, delays in sending and that stuff. Some kind of way to take payment, some way to give that full product as a purchase. Mm-hmm. So giving that lifetime access to that. Beyond that, it's on a case-by-case basis. I mean, my status quo for it is a WordPress site using the Thinkific course creation platform. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Thinkific, but using them for housing the all-access pass and taking the payments and tracking affiliates and then using my favorite email marketing right now that we're using is ActiveCampaign, because there is a lot of ways of taking people who sign up late, mm-hmm. and getting them into the funnel properly. And I'm just kind of putting that in out there because some of the other solutions that I've implemented require manual intervention to get people up to speed. And that's actually why I went with Active Campaign.
Yeah, it's a pain in the butt. And, you know, one of the things that I help people with myself is trying to figure out, okay, based on the platform that you have, a lot of times it's MailChimp. how do we make sure, okay, so these are the three videos that we want to send out, and we want to start putting them on this campaign, and then we want to feed them into this one. How are we going to do that? And yeah, you're right. A lot of the solutions that are out there have issues taking one list and then sticking it in to another one.
I mean, there's different levels of it, you know. I mean, and I've got a client who we ran her summit on AWeber, and I just had to do a manual process. I have another client that we ran her summit using ConvertKit, and it has some tagging abilities, but it still doesn't have the robustness of something that's more complex, that's really driven on the funnels. And so that's why I went with Active Campaign. Their price point is just fabulous. On this. I mean, I think it's like $9 a month, up to 500 subscribers or something like that.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's one of those like hidden gems out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And that's nothing to sneeze at, because I mean, you know, I've been involved with startups that will have like, you know, crazy amount of let's say 5,000. And, you know, it's just when you start with MailChimp, because it's like, oh yeah, you can have up to 2,000 people for free for, you know, and it's just like, okay, whatever. Because that if you know MailChimp, it's like they got such a bad reputation. I'm not trying to dump them, because I use them myself at the moment, because I'm not up to the point where, you know, I feel like I need to pay for anything. But at the same time, it's just trying to organize again these lists that are.
I'm in MailChimp regularly for clients. You know, I mean, there's definitely like WordPress clients that's what they need. That's what makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I'm not opposed to it. It's just when you are dealing with time sensitive data and time sensitive elements. Budgeting for an email marketing provider that will give you that is really all I'm trying to say is that just get it working. AWeber is actually doing a lot of really cool things on the back end, but they're not quite there yet. They're going to be a competitor, a big time competitor.
Good. Because back again, when we were talking about the thesis and the genesis and all that sort of stuff, I mean, they were the person to use. I mean, that was what Pat was recommending for everybody. And you know, I was just like,
and we all listened to Pat.
Everybody has to get AWeber. So, how do you find the right kind of guests for, or presenters for a virtual summit?
Yeah. You know, I think that it's really digging into your network and digging into the people that you are inspired by within your realm, and, you know, getting a good number of, people who don't necessarily have the massive following, but have a following. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you need to bring, you know, Pat Flynn into your summit for it to be successful. You know, if you had Pat Flynn and Amy Porterfield on it, you're going to have more success, possibly, as long as, you know, everybody else is, you know, is where they're at. But if you bring in people who have several hundred, several thousand followers who just trust them, their list is going to be inspired to hear what questions you ask them. Just like when you ask somebody to come onto your podcast, you know that they're going to, as long as the podcast interview is good, share that out. It's the same thing with the summit. So if you have somebody who has a good following and is happy to share that stuff, that's going to be more valuable than having somebody who's name only but doesn't do any promotion.
Right.
So it's kind of a balance between those. Mm-hmm. And you know, I mean, and especially when you're in your field of expertise or this field that you want to be in, you know who those big names are, who those, hey, I just heard about this cool person, you know, and you follow them and you're like, wow, they've got a really loyal following, those kinds of people too. So, and then always mixing it in with somebody who's newer in the field, who is still who still sees the pipe dream of the vision so that they can really excite the guests, or sorry, excite the participants, the people who are coming mm-hmm. to listen to the stuff.
Well, and it's those newer people that at least, you know, one of the things that I have realized is that there's this thing called the professor phenomenon, right? And what that is that the more success that someone has, the higher up that they're going to get, the more removed that they're going to be from the person that's brand new. And it's not that those people want that to happen. I mean, they try their hardest to try to still stay to, you know, talking to the beginner as much as they can. But the mm-hmm. problem is they just have all those followers that right. they can't offer that one-on-one or 1 to 10, 100, whatever, the smaller numbers like they once were able to do. And so that's when you need, you know, the TAs like you, like me, that have been in the industry for a while and can actually be like, okay, so this is what, let's just use Pat again. We were talking about him already. This is what sure. Pat was talking about, but this is where it actually applies to you, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's like one of those things when you have your silent mentors and your real mentors are a step or two ahead of you. Your silent mentors are 10 or 20 steps in front of you.
Exactly.
And you are a mentor to someone who's one or two steps behind you. They may be 1 or 2 years behind you on the journey. They may be, you know, just in a slightly different, you know, moving into the space kind of thing. So, you know, being able to bring in, you know, credibility through the bigger names that, you know, yes, this person took my call and they're happy, but also bringing in people who the audience can actually feel like they're gonna, like this person gets me is right. very, very valuable.
For sure. For sure. So, 2017 already, we're actually a month or actually not, well, we are a month in, I mean, almost. What are you looking forward to more helping more people with the virtual summit stuff, I'm sure, but what else you got going on?
Oh, you know, that's actually my biggest thing is getting these virtual summits, you know, on much more of a, structure so that I can run more than one at a time, you know, so bringing on a team of people who can replicate the work that I do and, you know, really kind of growing the Virtual Summit Tech brand so that we become the go-to and so I can have like project managers and, you know, really grow a team. So, because I think that this is one of those businesses that if I grow it right, can be everything that, you know, your dreams are as an entrepreneur to be able to take that step sideways where you've got, have a little bit more passive income, where you have, the exponential growth, but you're not buried in work, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's one of them. And then of course, and I mentioned it to earlier on, I'm going to be 40 this year. So I have some birthday wishes that I'm hoping will come true. And maybe I'll just get my husband to listen to this. But yeah, and my older daughter is in fifth grade this year, so it's her last year of elementary school. Mm. So that's kind of crazy. I'm going to be a mom of a middle schooler within this year, and it's just life goes on.
Yeah, that changes quite a bit of things when they go to middle school. My mom was taught long time elementary, and when she moved to the middle school, it was. Everybody's like, it was the same students, but they were just, you know, life just changes so much dramatically. So, yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wish me luck.
Yeah, I am. So cool. Well, I guess we're moving into the rapid fire question segment of the interview. Are you ready?
Okay. I hope so.
All right. So one of my favorite questions to ask is this first one. And I always like to get a feel for, you know, people's education based on who they see as influencers or teachers. So who are three influencers or teachers that have helped you get to where you are today?
Oh, well, without a doubt, Natalie Ekdahl of the Biz Chicks podcast. I started listening to her when she first launched her podcast, probably within the first week, and she's become a friend. And so I'm just like, she just helps kind of straighten and narrow, you know, things out. She's amazing. I'd have to say Kate Erickson of EO Fire. She's awesome, absolutely inspired by her and her words. And Ryan Lee of Freedom.
Okay, cool. I'm not familiar with Ryan, but okay, I'll have to check him
out. Oh, you're going to have to look him up. Freedom, Freedym.
Interesting.
Yes. You're going to be blown away, I promise.
Okay, well, I'll look forward to it. I'll check it out right after the interview then. Cool. What is one gift that you like giving others?
What do I like giving others? I like giving others chocolate.
You'd be surprised. It's either people giving chocolate or, you know, receiving it that, you know, it's usually the thing. So it's just like, huh. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that I put on my list of like, I'm randomly going to show up at my husband's office at some time this year and just give him a box of chocolates because I can. That's kind of where I was going with that one.
Well, you don't have to give the flowers. You're the chocolate giver. You see?
Yeah, he gives me chocolate too.
Oh, okay. Hey, that works. That's great. Yeah. Between my wife and I'm more of the chocolate giver. You know, she expects dead flowers, but I'm like, you know, chocolate. That's where it's at.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of things I'd like to receive, but you know, just in general, chocolate is a good one. I know it's an easy one to pick up, like our when you're on vacation for people and things like that too, because you don't just have to go to the neighborhood, you know, to the neighborhood Sees or Godiva or something like that. You can go and get some fun, cool stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. And if you ever make it to the East Coast, specifically Pennsylvania, and you get to go to actually Hersheyville. There is nothing like actual going to Hershey and taking the tour, and then they have a gift shop where you can buy the freshest Hershey stuff, and it is so different than the stuff that you would buy in any convenience store. It's just
I'm sure yeah.
It's so weird, but if you were to wake, okay, so if the next one is, if you were to wake up tomorrow as a, the 10-year-old version of yourself and you still had all your memories, what would you do?
Wow. You know, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and I think that I would journal. I would start journaling. Because there are so many things that I have really loved in my life, and there are so many things that I have forgotten how much I loved in my life, that I would really want to just document them and have them for to look back on.
Yeah. Well, and no. I mean, that's you're right. I didn't even think about that before, and yeah, that's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah, I keep thinking I should start journaling. You know, I keep thinking it and I never do it.
Come on, everybody says to journal and meditate, right? Come on, get on top of that.
Busted. You busted me, you know. I've tried writing and stuff, but it's just, no, I feel silly wasting my time doing it. Meditating and, you know, and looking inward, I'm okay at doing that on a weekly-ish basis. Mm-hmm. But the journaling part is not something.
Well,
but that's something I think if I were 10, I'd go back to.
You know, now that we're talking about the big names, I think Ferris, with his new Titans book, I think is bundled with his favorite journal. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, you know, my financial advisor sent that to me. It's sitting on the when I go on vacation pile.
Gotcha.
It's not a light read. I think, you know, what is it, like 2 inches thick?
Well, most of his books are, you know, but yeah. He puts a lot of time into them, so.
That's true. I might have to crack the spine before then, before the next vacation.
Yeah, for sure. What is one thing you believe all high school students must know?
They must know how to write in cursive. I know. I am old school, as techie as I am.
Yeah, that was kind of right-brained. I was like, wow.
It was totally right-brained. But you know what? I get some of my most creative ideas when I sit down on the floor and just write with a Sharpie marker on a big post-it note and write in cursive. And I know how crazy that sounds. Again, I can sit at my computer and type for hours, but some of my, you know, favorite ideas that I've ever had have come in longhand. Hmm. So even though I don't journal, apparently I can write.
Well, maybe you just need a journal in cursive. There you go.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. How can someone be a difference maker in their community?
Participate. You know, there are so many events and opportunities to participate. Yeah, for good, you know, whether it's participating in a charity walk or a charity, you know, or a food drive or participating at, you know, in some volunteer capacity. That I think is the highest level of anything that you can do, because it's being right there and right connected. And I'm just thinking of, you know, in town we have, you know, community events. Being part of the organization of those events rather than just attending them maybe once every so often is a world of difference. Mm.
Yeah. It's when I started asking this question, the answer was make a potluck, you know, in your neighborhood. And that has very, very much the same essence there. So yeah, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. No, you know, I mean, like I've participated in, you know, charity walks for years, but I've never been on the organizing side of it. And that's something I think would just bring a whole new level to it.
So as we're closing today, and really want, you know, people to remember you by, you know, what you do here. And so I'm going to ask you, real quick, simple, easy question for you. Give me 3 or 4 steps that someone can use to, in the process of formulating their next virtual summit.
For sure. So really, it's a matter of figuring out what is your end goal? Like, where do you want people to end up after they've consumed your summit content? Because if you know the end, then you know how to get them there a lot easier. Also, coming up with your, you know, whether you want to call them A, B, and C guests, that kind of thing is something so that you can make sure that that goes back to that ultimate goal. And then bringing the right people onto your team so that you don't have to do the things that you're not great at. I mean, if you are an amazing interviewer, which I'm sure you are as you're putting together a summit, you don't necessarily need to be the person who is the editor. You know, bring on an editor, bring on someone who can put together your summit, you know, like my tech team. Sorry, that was subtle.
Great. And if people need help with doing this or they need access to your tech team, where can they find you?
VirtualSummitTech.com. That's where we're at. I've got a very simple click this button to set up a call with me. And if you hang out on there, you can also grab my my download of tools that or tricks that you can use. I think I don't remember what one is on there. I've had a few different ones. So, you know, it depends on when people show up as to whether they're going to get tech tools to avoid, tech tools to use in your summit, things like that.
Cool. Great. All right. Well, Jamie, definitely a pleasure having you on. And look forward to the little niche that you're creating and making for yourself there. I like that.
Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
And there you have it, guys. Jamie is really gifted at what she can help you with. Not only can she help you with your next or first virtual summit, she can also help you with getting your super deluxe WordPress site up as well. I mean, she really goes a step beyond what a lot of other web developers do these days. And, you know, you can tell by the interview that she's definitely the real deal. Today's show note extras, which you can find in the show notes at newinceptions.com/76. I have a few videos of her explaining other topics related to web development. And the first video is about how to actually insert PayPal links inside of your emails if you wanted to do that. And I personally didn't even know that that was a thing. So I definitely had to share it with you guys. And after that, I have a video where she's illustrating what shared website hosting is and You know, that's basically the type of hosting that most of us have to start out with. And if you haven't started your website yet, this is a good video for you to watch and kind of find out what that is. And then third video is of Jamie explaining why it's important to keep your plugins and WordPress itself up to date. It's actually something that's pretty easy and simple to do. But when I have to help people figure out what might be wrong with their website, I'll go in and I get kind of puzzled when I, you know, see that they haven't updated 10 plugins. and I'm just like, yeah, that's definitely a security issue. But yeah, if that's you, or if you don't know if that's you, check out this video. And updating your plugins regularly keeps, you know, bad guys from screwing your site up. So the final resource is an interview with a mutual friend of ours, Laura Peterson, who I interviewed back in session 63. Laura dives into the topic of virtual summits a bit more with Jamie, so you can find out more if that's something you want to consider for your next project. So be sure to check those show note extras out at newinceptions.com/76 and continue carrying on the conversation a little bit further. So that pretty much wraps things up for session 76. Really glad that you could jump on here with us. You know, we just got another good review this past week I wanted to share with you guys. Charles Winterton says about the show that good podcast and full of tips and tricks for moving forward professionally. And I like how the creator interviews people from various professional landscapes who have built success through their own hard work. Thank you so much, Charles, for that review. And definitely, you know, it's one of our big things here at the show is that we definitely want to get creators of all kinds on here, you know, because I believe that makes the show more relatable. And, you know, I believe I'm doing that when I get a comment like yours. So thank you so much for your review, and I really appreciate it. And again, if you have some feedback for us, let us know. We really appreciate iTunes reviews, but sending us emails is just as appreciated. You can send them our way via heyguys@newinceptions.com. And, you know, as far as the show next week, I'll be interviewing a podcast talent by the name of Chris Ripka, and he hosts his own streaming video show called Raw and Real, as well as helping other creators with the podcast craft as a whole. I mean, the guy has a ton of knowledge about it, and to him, it's really like an art. You know, he knows the history, and he knows what's popular right now, and he isn't afraid to experiment with what comes down the line either. So if you want to hear a bit more about podcasting in general and where it's going, then this next interview is definitely one that you'll want to catch. You know, he's also going to be dropping a few tips to help you make sure that you have a great show as well. So again, that's all there is to session 76. Thanks for joining Jamie and myself. And until next time, dig in, have fun, and take care in whatever you're doing. And we'll see you back here next week.
Listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter @newinceptions, or on the web @newinceptions.com.